Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Today, we're going to give you the latest on health and healing, continue with our discussion on fascism is coming alive again, Eric Margolis. We're going to talk about the real American exceptionalism from Fred Card and Alfred McCoy. We're going to look at the environmental issues today of as Antarctic melts away, seas could rise by 10 feet. And they're saying that it's speeding up. Also, the recolonization of Africa, Jim Goodman from Common Dreams, everything that you needed to know about the bee die-off, and I've come up with a way of helping those who would like to get bees on your property, but you don't know how, where to start. And I'll show you how to get your own swarm going. And plus, if time permits, the latest on Fukushima, because it's still happening. And I'll also share some additional insights on some of the problems of vaccine programs around the world that you've only heard one side of the story, that they're positive, eradicating disease, but you haven't heard the other side. And that's a deadly side. I'll share that with you. Let's begin. New dietary guidelines reversed the flow of wrong information on cholesterol. This is from Dr. Joseph McCullough, and he has something I think is very important, because I remember back at the very beginning of my career and being asked by a family circle, a very popular magazine at the time, to write an article on the cholesterol controversy. And when I looked at the science that was available, it was not clear-cut. The question was, are the saturated fats the real culprit? And when you have an elevated cholesterol, are you more likely to die of heart disease? Some of the indicators showed yes, but they were not complete, because there were also people in the world that had a lot of saturated fat in their diets that did not have a high incidence of heart disease at all. In fact, they were living rather long lives. But the emphasis was that the saturated fats were bad, elevated your cholesterol, so therefore go to the good fats, the fats such as margarine, the trans fats. And for over 50 years, America has been consuming massive amounts of these fats, and wherever possible, staying away from saturated fats. But this is what happens when you have profit and big industries controlling the science and the distribution of the information. As an example, about 5 years ago, I made up a pyramid, a food pyramid, showing what I believe the science, the real science, independent science, shows should be the percentages of grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, fruits, vegetables into the diet on a daily basis. And comparing that, of course, to the standard basic four food group that you're supposed to have so many servings of meat and dairy and wheat per day. And vegetables and fruit were the lowly items on there. Now, every time there would be an effort to change those, in would step industry. And industry would say no. And as a result, it would be scrapped. And I know that for a fact, because the head of the legislator, Senator McGovern's office, called me and told me, and even sent me a copy of the finished, approved, ready-to-go new dietary guidelines, but then were yanked because the scientists for hire who were sitting on the boards as advisors, all with financial connections, had dictated no, wanted to keep it meat and dairy. That was it. But he just wanted to let me know how political the whole system was, and not even McGovern, who was for a revised one, could get any say-so. Today we know that some saturated fats are very good for you, and you need them. Your brain needs them. Your immune system needs them. such as coconut oil, and some saturated fats, like from meat and from the fat in meat, are very bad, especially the arachidonic acid. It's very pro-inflammatory. Some of the unsaturated fats are not good, like cottonseed oil and some of the other oils that are highly refined, canola oil. But some of those oils are extremely beneficial because of the percentage of certain fatty acids, including the omega-3 fatty acids, such as walnut oil, almond oil, avocado oil, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil. Olive oil is at the top of that list, but they're all good. So you see it, but that's having input where there's no financial consequence. It's just telling the truth. So in comes Marcola on this very issue, and he gives us what he believes is the problem behind our heart disease and many of the things that will impact your cholesterol level. That he says it's not just about the fats, because there have been times in America we've had very low fat intake, and it has not helped us. It's actually hurt us. So it's the quality of the fats. Here's what he says, quote, "The low-fat craze led to an avalanche of new processed food products promising to benefit both your waistline and your heart. Alas, nothing could be further from the truth. When fat was removed, sugar was added in, and this has led to a massive increase in obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. As it turns out, your body metabolizes fructose in the same way it metabolizes ethanol, creating the same toxic effects. Unlike glucose, which can be used by virtually every cell in your body, fructose can only be metabolized by your liver, because your liver is the only organ that has the transporter for it. Now, since nearly every fructose molecule gets shuttled to your liver, and if you eat a typical Western-style diet, you consume high amounts of fructose, it ends up taxing and damaging your liver in the same way alcohol and other toxins do. In fact, when you compare the health outcomes of fructose versus alcohol consumption, you see the diseases are virtually identical. Example, chronic alcohol consumption, hypertension, cardiomyopathy, pancreatitis, obesity, hepatic dysfunction. Chronic fructose consumption, that would be your soft drinks, for example. Hypertension, myocardial infarction, pancreatitis, obesity, and hepatic dysfunction. Fetal alcohol syndrome in alcohol, fetal insulin resistance in high fructose. Addiction in alcohol, habituation, if not addiction, in high fructose. So non-alcoholic liver disease has become a serious public health concern. Dr. Robert Lustig, professor of pediatrics in the Division of Endocrinology at the University of California, has been a pioneer in decoding sugar metabolism and sounding the alarm on processed fructose in particular. In a paper published in the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, Dr. Lustig describes three similarities between fructose and its fermentation byproduct, ethanol, which is alcohol. One, your liver's metabolism of fructose is similar to alcohol, as they both serve as substrates for converting dietary carbohydrate to fat, which promotes insulin resistance and fatty liver. Two, fructose undergoes the Maillard reaction with proteins, leading to the formation of superoxide free radicals that can result in liver inflammation. Three, by stimulating the hedonic pathway of the brain, both directly and indirectly, fructose creates habituation, meaning addiction. So what he is saying here is that we've had the wrong guidelines, dietary guidelines, that has led to flawed medical interventions, and that we're not looking at what we should be, and that is that the sugars in our diet, and I would add the refined sugar sucrose, the fructose, the high fructose corn syrup, and also I would say that we have to start looking at artificial sweeteners, because they're really devastating to your brain. And then what you do, you give people the American diet, they end up with insulin resistance, they end up with leptin resistance, they end up with high cholesterol. So you put them on statin-lowering drugs. They're ineffective for heart disease prevention. In fact, they actually cause heart disease. That's correct. So everything we're doing when it comes to the heart is wrong. And so what can we do that's right? What's the takeaway message that can save lives, reduce heart disease and diabetes? First, you can replace, as we've mentioned many times, all of the refined sugars and carbohydrates and fructose and trans fats, all of which promote heart disease. Substitute them for whole, unprocessed, ideally organic and locally grown food. Eliminate all meats and animal products and dairy and eggs. Eliminate non-fat, low-fat foods. Increase your consumption of healthy fats. That's why every day I suggest you have either an avocado or a nut butter. Everything from cashews to pecans to almonds, walnuts, pistachios, they're all good for you. And coconut oil. Balance the omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids. That's a very important factor in your heart. And make sure you're getting a good amount of calcium, magnesium, and potassium. And vitamin D, which is also good. And then make sure you're getting good fermented foods every day. Miso is good. Sauerkraut is good. And exercising regularly is really one of the safest, easiest things in the world to do to prevent and treat heart disease. Researchers last year at Harvard and Stanford University looked at 305 different controlled studies. And they found that, quote, no statistically detectable differences between physical activity and medications for heart disease. Whoa. Think of that for a moment. If you're doing some good aerobic and resistant exercises 5 days a week, you're doing as much as you could if you were taking medication. Here's 305 studies done by Harvard and Stanford reviewing them, showing no difference. So in my opinion, my personal opinion, I don't believe anybody should be taking statin drugs. They're one of the most dangerous drugs in the world. And physicians should know that. Something else is dangerous, but we do not take it seriously yet. What will it take to finally realize that we have to pay attention to electromagnetic pulses as a serious health problem? Probably when the official news media reports on emerging or epidemic levels of different dysfunctions or diseases or cancers due to them. Then it gets our attention. But right now, to give you the latest on this, the European Union recently drafted a groundbreaking document which would have represented a giant leap forward in protecting citizens from electromagnetic field exposures, and especially the wireless ones like your cell phone. But at the last moment, the proposals, according to the UK Radiation Research Trust, were changed. And so won't be seeing that. But there were conflict of interest that we found, and so that's kind of common. But here's what it's shown. They can initiate electromagnetic devices, including your cell phone, can, quote, initiate cancer and promoting effects, impaired brain function, loss of memory and cognitive function, infertility, immune dysfunction. So, and if you want to read about this, there's over 5,000 peer-reviewed scientific papers on electromagnetic pulse. And you can read Bioinitiative Working Group. And see. So when someone says, well, we're not sure, the evidence is not in, there's no consensus, it's controversial. No, it's not controversial. And yes, there is a consensus. You've got 5,000 peer-reviewed papers in Science, and it shows what electromagnetic pulses can do. and they're dangerous. Now, yesterday I mentioned near the end of my health discussion about root canal. And Natural Society came up with an interesting article here on it. I'm going to share this with you. And of the holistic physicians that I know, all of them are concerned about root canals because it can leave a person with permanent infections and abscesses. Unless, of course, they're holistic dentists, they know how to use ozone, where they'll take a tiny little, it's the smallest needle you'd ever see. It looks like a hair. That's how thin it is. And they go up in there, and each one of the canals, they infuse some ozone, and it kills out the residual local focal infection, the pocket. And therefore, there's no longer a problem up there. But the question is, and we don't hear this asked in the mainstream, are root canals safe? There's a Dr. George Minig. He is the author of Root Canal Cover-Up and was a founding member of the American Association of Endodontics. Now, he quit the association later in his career after he saw firsthand the adverse effects that root canal have on the immune system. He also witnessed the irreparable damage to the jaw bone caused by the infected cavitation sites where root canal teeth once sat. But let's assume for a moment someone in this audience may not know what exactly a root canal is. Okay. The standard root canal procedure effectively kills the tooth by removing all the dental pulp. And the dental pulp contains the blood supply and the nerves and the connective tissue. So once the pulp chamber in the center of the tooth is emptied of these vital tissues, it is incapable of carrying on necessary functions. The filling materials, such as the what is called gutta percha, G-U-T-T-A-P-E-R-C-H-A, which are used to fill the pulp chamber, are chosen for their properties to expand into tiny spaces, the little cracks and crevices of your voided root. Something has to take their place. Well, the gutta percha, a common dental product, is the rigid natural latex produced in the sap of the gutta tree. And this type of filling material has been the cause of many root canals that have gone bad. Truth be told, every root canal is problematic because once the tooth has been devitalized, it can no longer perform the critical function of cleansing, repair, and growth. And a root canal tooth is, in fact, a dead tooth. So the introduction of toxic and allergenic filling materials sets up an environment that invites infection. And therefore, every root canal tooth ultimately becomes infected, albeit most are low grade in subclinical infections. But then again, how many times have you adapted to a local infection in your body? Just live with it. Think of the people that wake up every morning and they have pain in their joints. And they just put their mind on other things. They don't think about it. The pain is there. And what caused the pain? Inflammation. And the swelling is still there. So it is not unusual to have multiple local infections. How many people have bloating and gas and distension? How many people have parasites? And those parasites are not going to go away on their own. You can get rid of them, but we adapt to them. And because a root canal will always eliminate the tooth's capacity to properly cleanse itself, it becomes a breeding ground for bacteria. And many root canal teeth develop infections right at the root. These infections are called focal infections, which can ultimately cause disease and illness in different parts of the body. You've heard me mention many times that heart disease and heart attacks can be due to infections in your mouth, including some of the viruses that are in your mouth that can travel to your heart. Cytomegalovirus is just one. So it is the systemic nature of these focal infections that often causes them to evolve into various autoimmune disorders. And since many root canals sit in the mouth for decades, there exists ample opportunity for various target organs and organ systems to be undermined by these undetected and often subclinical focal infections. So the thousands of dentin tubules which form the matrix of the dentin becomes permeated with bacteria. Kind of imagine that you left a piece of food in the bottom and back of the refrigerator, and then about 2 months later you look back there and it's just all kind of green and moldy and black. That, to some degree, is what can happen when these dentin tubules become permeated with bacteria. As the toxins accumulate over time, the dead tooth can no longer properly detoxify itself, and that leads to the abscess tooth, of which the only healthy remedy is extraction. Now, even after extraction, the tooth site can continue to harbor a focal infection if not properly evacuated and treated. And some oral surgeons and dentists, for instance, fail to remove the periodontal ligament and the adjacent bone, which frequently become infected after the root canal procedure. So the relentless assault to the body's immune system in its attempt to address focal infections of this type weakens the natural immune response that autoimmune dysregulation can occur in. And the longer this predicament is allowed to fester, the greater likelihood of development of a full-blown autoimmune disease. So that's what it is. So that's why it's so important to pay attention, get a holistic dentist who understands this, and then you're less likely to end up having infections and abscesses. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Now, I keep adding little items that can help us better understand the aging process, and I'll add a few more today. Now, I've already explained to you a few that I believe are necessary, including resveratrol and grapes, grape juice, grape seeds, grape skin, everything about the grape. That's really good. Then we want anything that can turn off inflammation and glycation and mitochondrial decay, which are the hallmarks of aging. I knew some very wonderful human beings. They were dynamic. They were all very old when I met them, and I was at the very beginning of my career, very young. And one of the things I noticed was they all were very concerned about their looks. Now, they had all been famous legends of Hollywood. In fact, one of them helped start Hollywood, Gloria Swanson. She had, in her 70s, she had skin that was like, if you looked at her hands, they were no wrinkles and very conscientious. And she was always saying, now, Gary, what's the latest? What's the latest? I want to get it in there. Well, what we know now compared to then, we know a whole lot more. And in one respect, I stop and I think about this. If only I knew then what I know now, how many more people would still be living and how much healthier they would be. But it's important to understand that we're always going to be adding something into the body of knowledge that we started with. So we can say, gee whiz, if only I'd have been able to tell my mom the dangers of smoking and show it to her. But I couldn't, because we didn't know everything. But we know a lot today. So today we can say that if you want to slow down your aging process, if you actually want to reverse some of the aging processes, we can do that. For example, the loss of cellular vitality is caused by a number of factors, including mitochondrial problems. That's your energy. That's why the older we get, the more tired people become. Brain fog, brain fatigue. They can't focus. They can't carry their concentration. They tire quickly. But that doesn't have to be. If you fed the mitochondria every day, you'd have energy that you had when you were 18. We also have glycation. Now, glycation is really easy to deal with. This is a no-brainer. Glycation, glide, G-L-Y, cation, C-A-T-I-O-N. Remember, I've said it 1,000 times. Visualize a plump, moist chicken, put it in the oven 2 hours later, crisp and brown. That's glycation. That's what happens when you eat processed foods. Hamburgers, hot dogs, pizzas, french fries, soft drinks. So when you go to a clean diet, a clean, wholesome living diet, you're not going to have glycation like that. And then we have what is called free radical reactions. Now, you can't stop free radical reactions. They're a normal part of life. In fact, when you exercise, you're creating massive amounts of them. But as long as you compensate by taking a pre-exercise drink and a post-exercise drink, and you put some vitamin C in, some electrolytes in it, and have vitamin D and coenzyme Q10, then you're trapping those free radicals. So you get the benefit of exercise, but you've neutralized the downside of free radical reactions. So what can we do today? Okay, here's our takeaway. Good news today. First, let's look at carnosine. Carn, C-A-R-N, O-S-I-N-E, O-S-I-N-E, carnosine. As we age, the proteins in our body become irreversibly damaged by glycation. Every one of those pizzas you will pay for. Interesting, later today I have to counsel a person. And this person, by phone, because I still counsel when I'm out of town. But it was interesting because just 3 years ago, this person and some others were meeting with me. I had just finished a premiere in Miami. And it was a premiere of a film at an international film festival. And wherever I can, I like to go to these because I like to support the community. I find it wonderful and exciting and interesting to listen to all the other filmmakers, what projects they're working on and how they did it and their next project, etc. And there's a lot of camaraderie. There's a whole lot of just good feelings. So anyhow, at this dinner, I looked at the menu and I saw, okay, they had, you know, I could have some broccoli. So I asked him about the broccoli and could they saute it lightly and with lots of garlic. And when I said lots of garlic, I said, bring me a bowl of garlic with a little broccoli. And they got that message. And with a baked potato and some grilled eggplant. So that's what I had. What was interesting is it took 10 minutes for this person and the person they were with on, there were many people, but I was, of which steak they were going to have. Should we have the filet mignon or should they have the ribeye and back and forth and back and forth. And the alcohol before the meal and during the meal and after the meal. Now keep in mind, and I've told you all this so many times, that I never criticize or challenge a person for the choices they're making. They don't need me, they're grown-ups, to tell them what they want. They may want to ask me at some point, are there better options? But if they don't, it's not my prerogative to go cross that barrier. If you're socializing with someone, the whole purpose is to socialize, not to change someone politically or ideologically or on any level. You're just I believe you're there to enjoy that person's company. They've shared it with you, and that's what you respect, even if you have a completely different approach to diet. So I don't believe in police cops. So whatever a person eats, that's their body. It's their choice. And what I was thinking to myself when the food came, and I'm watching how much they're eating, and I'm watching all the bread, and I'm watching you can't help but watch how much food people put in their bodies versus how much do they need. We actually need very little if we're eating right. And that was the person who contacted my office recently and said, I need to see Gary. Why? Because I've just had my section aneurysm, my second. I was lucky to survive the first, and I won't be able to survive a third. And remind him, I've been listening to him for 19 years. I've never once taken his advice. Maybe I should start to listen. So interesting how we have a hard time coming to grips with the fact that the choices we make at any point in our life are going to be meeting us some other point in our life when we least expect it. There's a famous saying by Maria Curie, Madame Curie, and she said, nothing in life is to be feared, it is only to be understood. So once we understand that there is a reason why we like things and enjoy things and engaging things, but then do we step back and ask ourselves this more relevant question? And it's not an existential question. It's very pragmatic. Do we need this? Will this actually make my life better or worse? And if we've made those choices, not just emotional choices, but very pragmatic choices, then a lot of the choices we would made would not have led us to prematurely aging and prematurely dying and heart attacks and cancers and strokes and diabetes and divorces and bankruptcies and walking around with unrepentant rage, as so many people do. And by the way, I asked yesterday, I had a moment and I was looking at some of the postings on my personal Facebook. My policy is simple. Challenge all you want anything that you see, but do so with some sense of decorum and a sensitivity to the fact that challenge the argument, but do not denigrate the person. That's something that I just believe in. I believe that we can disagree, not just with me. This had nothing to do with me. It had to do with attacking someone and the words used. They were vile, they were rageful, they were hate-filled. And my sight's not for that. Constructive dialogue. And I like to see people who are commenting, comment as if you actually are thinking and not just reacting. It makes it far more engaging and far more interesting. In any case, back to carnosine. So when we look at all the glycation that we've put into our body for whatever reason, and we look at the fact that now we wake up one day and we see the results in the mirror. We see the glaucoma, we see the cataracts, we see the wrinkled skin. What you don't see is what's inside the body. Anything you see on the outside, you're going to see far more intensely on the inside. If you saw your liver, your brain, and how many cells have been killed because of the social drinking or this. So what can we do? The good news is we can take carnosine because it is an anti-glycating agent, and that's terrific. And it also protects neurons. It reduces reactive and cytotoxic protein carbinol species associated with aging. So if you took 1,000, 1,500 milligrams of carnosine a day, you're doing an enormous amount to slow down, even reverse the aging process. Also, it helps lengthen the telomeres or keeps them from shortening. Now, you've heard me mention PQQ. PQQ is a micronutrient. You don't need a lot of it. And it will trigger the mitochondrial biogenesis, meaning biogenesis, you literally grow new mitochondria. It also activates genes involved in protecting the delicate structures within the mitochondria. So that's good. Maybe 10 milligrams. Then lutein. Now, lutein is great because it helps as an anti-inflammatory. It turns off cytokines, interleukin-1, and tumor necrosis factor alpha. It's a flavonoid, and it's great if you have any inflammation. Well, diabetics, inflammation, cancer, inflammation, heart disease, inflammation, arthritis, inflammation, fibromyalgia, inflammation, itises, ileitis, colitis, all inflammation. So it helps almost everything. You don't need a lot, maybe 10 milligrams. Benfetamine, it modulates the destructive biochemical pathways that are induced by higher levels of blood sugar. So it's good, generally at about 75 milligrams. Pyridoxal-5-phosphate, let me explain it this way. Aging results in the formation of the advanced glycation end products throughout the body. Pyridoxal-5-phosphate, which is a form of vitamin B6, it's the active form of B6. It protects against fats and protein glycation in the body. And then alpha lipoic acid, L-I-P-O-I-C, it's the finest destroyer of free radicals. It facilitates youthful mitochondrial energy output. It guards against free radicals. So those are some nutrients that can make a difference and help slowing down the aging process. I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us today. Right now, if you challenge anything about vaccines, you're assailed. You're attacked as if you are anti-science. You are unreasonable. You're a person who would be jeopardizing the larger community. What that person may not be aware of who's attacking you is that there are now millions of Americans who have been injured or had adverse reactions to a member of their family from vaccines. It does not mean that they're not still pro-vaccine, but it means that they now understand that vaccines, contrary to what a doctor on Jimmy Kimmel says, oh, there's almost no side effects, that there are massive side effects. Let's just look at the numbers. If we know, for example, that there are 2 million parents with children who have autism, and there's only anywhere from a 2 to a maximum 10% adverse effects ever reported, so then that means that you have an enormous amount of children who could be suffering from some form of learning or brain abnormalities that have not yet been associated with vaccines. And that's true for all vaccines, by the way. Now, there has been an enormous effort to promote one vaccine above all, Gardasil. And there's a whole effort both at the federal level and at the state level. We spent thousands of hours doing an investigation on Gardasil. We have interviewed so many parents and children, the ones who survived, and scientists. And many of the critics who are now coming forward on vaccines are pediatricians, nurses, and educators, immunologists, toxicologists, who've actually looked at the data. And without exception, each one said, I assumed that vaccines were safe and effective, individually and collectively. I assumed the studies were there proving this. But when I looked, I couldn't find them. And then they start to do more and more research. This is just one statement from the former Merck physician, Dr. Bernard Dalberke, about Gardasil and Merck's human papillomavirus vaccine. Mind you, he was one of their top physicians. Quote, I predict that Gardasil will become the greatest medical scandal of all time because at some point in time, the evidence will add up to prove that this vaccine, technical and scientifically a feat that it may be, has absolutely no effect on cervical cancer and that all the very many adverse effects which destroy lives and even kill serve no other purpose than to generate profit for the manufacturers. Gardasil is useless and cost a fortune. In addition, decision makers at all levels are aware of it. Cases of major conditions and syndromes and paralysis of the lower limbs and vaccine-induced multiple sclerosis and vaccine-induced encephalopathic conditions can be found. End quote. When did we hear in the news from someone who is a vaccinologist, someone working in the field, someone working for a major vaccine maker who comes forward and denounces it? You never hear them, as if they don't exist, as if the only person speaking out against vaccines are some educated, uneducated person. It's not the case. Now, we've been told that, you know, we should be vaccinating for polio because it was, you know, the vaccine that ended it, and look how good it is today in the world because of Bill Gates and the World Health Organization and all their good work. Here's the part that you have not read. This is from the peer review Indian Journal of Medical Ethics, Volume 9, Number 2. The title of the article is Polio Program Let Us Declare Victory and Move On by Dr. Neetu Vaishya and Jacob Pulia. Quote, from the abstract, this is the summary of the article. I'm quoting verbatim from a major scientific review, and I have not heard this cited once in any discussion of vaccines in the United States. Quote, it was hoped that following polio eradication, immunization could be stopped. However, the synthesis of polio virus in 2002 made eradication impossible. It is argued that getting poor countries to expend their scarce resources on an impossible dream over the last 10 years was unethical. Furthermore, while India has been polio-free for a year, there has been a huge increase in non-polio acute flaccid paralysis, or NPAFP. In 2011, there was an extra 47,500 new cases of the non-polio acute flaccid paralysis. Clinically, the indistinguishable from polio paralysis, but twice as deadly, the incidence of these cases was directly proportional to doses of oral polio vaccine received. Though this data was collected within the polio surveillance system, it was never investigated. The principle of primum non nocere was violated. So, what does this mean in lay language? What is he actually saying? In the whole article, and by the way, there's another piece to this article further on, it says, quote, "This shows that the non-polio rate increases in proportion to the number of polio vaccine doses received in each area. Nationally, the non-polio symptoms, which are double as bad as polio, is now 1,200% higher than expected. In the states with the highest polio vaccines, including every month, the non-polio paralysis is 25 to 3,500% higher than the international norms. The relationship of the non-polio paralysis rate is with a more steep increase beyond six doses of the vaccine in 1 year. So what it means is that the polio vaccine given through the Gates Foundation and promoted by Gates and the World Health Organization caused 47,000 cases of paralysis, where the wild virus caused none. Now, in a country of 1.3 billion people, to have not one case, except for the 47,000 that were not called polio, but it was still the same identical one, and they were only in the kids that got the vaccine. So what we can say is, why haven't the scientists from India and the physicians from India been invited into the United States to talk about how 47,500 cases of paralysis death, these are people that died, by the way, wouldn't you think that if there are 47,000 cases of death in children that received a vaccine, multiple vaccines, all polio, that someone would say something? And how did they take that? Well, because they hired India's leading Bollywood actor to go on television and promote the vaccines. Now, this is not the first time that this has happened. We now see the same thing happening in Pakistan. Is it the same vaccine? Yeah. But here's what they're doing in Pakistan. And by the way, what is the worldwide epidemic of polio? Well, polio, let me give you the latest figures. And these are the latest official figures in the World Health Organization. It was, quote, an epidemic in certain parts of the world. Epidemic, all right, epidemic. Wow, millions, epidemic. No, in the entire world, there were 74 cases of polio. 74 cases. But we have over 7.5 billion people, 74 cases. And in Pakistan, and in most countries, there were zero. But let's say the leading cause of death worldwide is ischemic heart disease, 7 million. Stroke, 6 million. Low respiratory infections, 3.2 million. Diarrheal diseases, 1.9 million. Those are killing diseases. Compare that to 74. Not 74,000 or 74 million, 74. So what did they do with the idea that they were terrified in Pakistan? Quote from Brian Shilhavy, Health Impact News. The Guardian is reporting that health officials in Pakistan are arresting and throwing into jail hundreds of parents who refuse to allow their children to receive the oral polio vaccine. These health officials are forcing children to receive the vaccine at gunpoint. From The Guardian, quote, Faraz Shah, a spokesman for the district administration in Peshawar, said 471 people had been imprisoned in the city and surrounding villages under government orders on charges of endangering public security. Parents targeted by police were not arrested if they agreed to vaccinate their children. They didn't, then they were taken into jail. Now, what about this polio virus? Since it virtually has been conquered worldwide, which virus vaccine are they giving? Well, they're giving the oral one. Well, hold on, wasn't that the one that the CDC banned in the United States? And wasn't it banned because it was the only source of polio? That's correct. So that's just a little bit of the story. So this is part of the concerns I have, that we're not telling people the full story on any of these issues. From Jim Goodman, from our issue segment of our program today, the recolonization of Africa. Quote, most of the world's food is grown by small-scale farmers. While it is called traditional agriculture, it is never static and farmers constantly adapt. This traditional agriculture relies on a varied and changing mix of crops. What is called polyculture, which provides a balanced diet, is affordable for local farmers and can accommodate changing local conditions. The Green Revolution relied on increasing acreages of monocultures, mostly cereal grains, which also increased the use of herbicides, insecticides, and fertilizers, as well as new varieties of high-yielding crops. Inputs that small farmers, those who fed the people, were never meant to afford. It was an unsustainable system that called for too many inputs, too much machinery, and too much energy. Credit was an essential part of the Green Revolution, creating debts that could never be repaid, and it did nothing to empower women, who grow a considerable portion of the world's food. It gave them no access to education, no power, and made it more difficult for them to maintain the rights of their land. Most importantly, the Green Revolution did not end hunger. The Green Revolution never met expectations in Africa. It was for many reasons, including civil wars, corrupt governments, governments that often could not work together, inaccessibility of water for irrigation, very diverse soil types, a lack of infrastructure, and the sheer breadth of the continent. Perhaps Africa was lucky. While the Green Revolution was put forth as a solution to feed the hungry, it was also focused on permanently allowing Western governments to dominate politics and national economies, a brand new type of colonialism. Now, as global agribusiness interests look to expand their profits with the financial backing of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the U.S. Agency for International Development, various charitable foundations, the NGOs, and the political backing of more developed countries, the World Bank's G8, Africa is the obvious target to be saved and developed. Corporation profit, Western governments gain control. The Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa, or AGRA, seems to have all the answers. Started by Bill and Melinda Gates and the Rockefeller Foundations and fronted by the African dignitaries, their goals for Africa appear to be remarkably similar to those of the first Green Revolution. They want to increase agricultural production through increased inputs, monoculture, meaning a single product, genetically engineered, production of grain crops for the global market, and little in the way of societal change to empower small-scale farmers, women, or the poor. In a new twist to the old Green Revolution, AGRA is focused on private control rather than public, which means more profit, less oversight. A prime example, private seed companies will produce and sell their improved seed varieties genetically engineered to farmers, rather than giving farmers access to publicly developed seeds. While most countries in Africa have no commercial plantings of genetically modified crops, many are conducting trials, aided by and politically pushed by Western governments. And while AGRA claims their partners are not currently selling GM seeds in Africa, the push is clearly there. The Gates Foundation would like their association with Agra to appear a strictly philanthropic venture, but it appears that as Monsanto's stands to profit, so does the Gates Foundation endowment. Agra states that, quote, only about one quarter of Africa's smallholder farms have access to good seeds. Well, good seeds in the eyes of Agra and partners are genetically modified seeds, seeds that must be purchased every year, not farmer save seeds. Traditional seed laws that allow savings and exchange between farmers are now going to be banned. So that's the new colonialism in Africa. Thank you to the Bill Gates Foundation and your wife and to all your big Agra supporters. It's just for profit, nothing personal. The fact that you're going to join with the, not directly but indirectly, with the hedge funds and the equity partnerships in buying up large tracts of land and forcibly removing the indigenous tribes into a life of death or poverty is irrelevant. You'll control the land. You'll control the governments. You control the politicians. You control the seeds. And who controls the food controls the people. Smart move, I guess. But a really bad move morally, ethically. But it's just more the same. I will deal with other commentaries, including the real American exceptionalism and fascism is coming alive again in America on my next program. I'll also tell you how to start your own beehive and how it'll really work and how you can keep from having bee colony collapse. I'm a beekeeper, and so I'll show you something I recently did where there were no bees to suddenly have a whole bunch of bees, and you can do it yourself for pennies. Also, in helping our sister station to do a retreat, we have filled up our week, but we had more people calling in than what we had room for, so we are adding a second week. Now, the first week is filled. That's the 12th to the 17th. So we're going to start on the Sunday, the 17th, and go for one more week. So if you'd like to join the people coming to help change their life, to de-stress, to get a different perspective on life, to be happy, joyful, detoxify, cleanse, rebalance, you can do it. Everything will be there, including some great food and lots of nice people coming from all over the United States to help. And but the first week again is please don't call for the first week. We're full. It's my intention to always kind of keep it a little on the light side because it gives chance for the people who are there to get more attention, more time, and it doesn't burn all the counselors out. Call Luann if you'd like to come for the second week. 631-504-6198, 631-504-6198. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.
Stop and thank you, baby. I want to stop and thank you, baby. Hey, now, how sweet it is to be loved by you. Oh, baby, how sweet it is to be loved by you. Yes, you do. And wonder what would I be without you in my life. Everything was just a bore.